This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard and Mark, Matt Marcus. Sorry about just
Mike.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
You were not exactly Joe Cap there in the pocket.
Presented by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Let's go here on a Monday morning Brock and Salk show. Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com, and the Seattle Sports app, of course. Yes, it's that time of the year. It's that time of the year where Washington is essentially unlivable.
Can't really
live here. Can't live here this time of year. The pollen is out of control.
Okay. I was going to say, yesterday was beautiful.
No, it was beautiful out, but the pollen is out of control. It needs to stop.
It's bad.
Everything is yellow. Everything is just gross, and it's all in my throat and my nose and my eyes, and it itches, and the Flonase isn't enough, and anyway.
I'll take this over rain, though, anytime. I don't know, obviously.
Yeah. You know, it'd be nice. Like, this weather without the pollen would be really... really, really nice. Yeah. Anyway, so another frustrating weekend for the Mariners. We're just going to jump right into it today. No messing around, no delay tactics.
Pleasantries.
No pleasantries, nothing like that. We're just going to dig right into it. Why is this so freaking frustrating? Why is it so maddeningly aggravating? For a bunch of reasons. But I think more than anything else for me anyway, is that I just want to see what the team is supposed to look like. I just want to see what they look like. And it's impossible when half the guys on the team aren't hitting. And when I say not hitting, I don't mean like they're below their career average a little. I mean like they are not major league quality hitters at the moment. I think Julio will return to being a major league quality hitter, right? So do you, probably.
Yep.
Right? I do think there will be a moment where he hits a home run this year. I don't think he's going to have a zero when the season is all said and done. But as of today, the man has no home runs. I don't think they're going to ground into a double play every single time there's a big moment. But as of right now, they are. I don't think they're going to be essentially last or in the like high 20s in every major offensive category for the entirety of the year. But right now, I'm shocked there's a category they're not 30th in. They look awful. Awful at the plate, and they compound it by making mistakes elsewhere. And, you know, the fact that the lasting memory now of the weekend is Julio getting picked off first to end a game. Oh, it stings. It's frustrating. And I'm as frustrated as anybody else is right now. But more so because I feel like we're just not getting the opportunity to just see how it was designed and see what it looks like if and when it works. If it works and it's not good enough, so be it. Then you get to say, oh, they should have done this, they should have done that, they could have done this if they'd spent this. Like, when the guys play the way they normally do, then you make real judgments on what should have been done differently. But when guys are 150 points off their career averages, when guys literally cannot make contact with a baseball with any degree of power, when no one hits home runs, especially some of your home run hitters, how do you judge the way the team was designed and the way it was built? It drives me nuts because I want to do that. Believe me. I generally watch baseball through the eyes of general managers, and I want to see whether they've done a good job. We talked last week about being early, and it is still early. I mean, they're still, you know, essentially 2 weeks plus into the season. And as they sit today, and this is the shocking, honestly, the most shocking thing of everything that's been surprising to start this season, the most shocking thing is that today the Mariners are two games out of first place.
Because it feels like they've already dug themselves.
It feels like they should be toast. They're two games out of first place. Texas has not played particularly well either. They lost 2 out of 3 over the weekend. Heck, Oakland's playing better than the Mariners and the Astros are right now. So when you see that, you know that it's early. You know that this is not necessarily a marker for how the rest of the season is going to go. But you just want to get an opportunity to see, all right, what is this going to look like, or what is this supposed to look like when the guys just hit to their career averages? Just play to their expectation level. And through 2 weeks or two plus weeks now, very few players on this team have done that. Text messages. Maybe they just aren't that good. Maybe. I am 100% open to the possibility that maybe this team is not very good. I was a little wary of some of the moves that they made this offseason. I was not as excited about some of it as some other folks were. I do think they've made some real problematic trades in terms of abilities. Not necessarily players, but trading off some of their ability to hit for power, for contact. I don't like that.
Especially not when the strikeout numbers are outpacing.
Yeah, which is truly, I mean, amazing. But that's why it's so frustrating, right? Like, hey, if you trade power for contact and you make a bunch of contact and you don't hit for very much power and then it doesn't work, we get to say, all right, you made a strategic decision and it didn't work. They did all of those things, except nobody's playing the way they're supposed to play. Mm-hmm. The guys that you traded for to make contact aren't making contact, and they're not hitting for power. So how do you judge whether or not your strategy works when the guys aren't even doing or being who they are? It drives me absolutely crazy.
Say that you believe that any of the guys that they've brought in are negative WAR players, because that's what they're playing, right?
Every one of them.
It's unbelievable.
I mean, it really is shocking.
Fans get nervous, though, because I feel like they're like, well, this is what we said about guys last year. They can't possibly keep playing this bad.
Right. And they didn't.
Some of the guys they brought in, it felt like they did.
Oh, well, those guys stunk.
Some of those, yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think they're like, okay, so you went out and got new guys this year.
But I mean, you know, Teoscar got better just as you thought that he would and ended up having some really good months and helping your team come within a game, go to the playoffs last year. And I'm sure that Polanco will heat up and have some moments. And I'm sure that Julio will heat up and have some moments. I'm sure all of those things will happen. Of course they will. Like, those guys are good players. But when all of your good players collectively play like such garbage, it really makes it hard to have a sense of who the team really is. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of it this morning. Scott's got his hands full trying to figure that out. He sits Julio down for a day, probably the right thing to do to just get his head straight. He brings him in as a pinch runner, and the dude gets picked off. I mean, you got to be kidding me. Yeah. I mean, you got to be kidding me. You figure, all right, he's in his own head. Let's let him do the one thing that should feel natural and normal to him, which is run. I don't know. Maybe Julio got over on first base and was like, I don't even know what this looks like over here. This feels foreign to me.
Oh, my gosh.
First base? What? I understand what the view's like in center and behind the plate. And here, first base? Oh, I got picked off. I don't know what happened. But, you can't start this way.
Yeah. I mean, what about how do you feel about the pitching these last this weekend, though?
It's pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
It said the same thing about the pitching. Like, we can't possibly be this awful.
Because they're not. Because those players aren't bad. Isn't it the same thing we're saying about the bats? Like, oh, Luis Castillo, two bad starts in a row. He's shot. Well, no, he's not. There was a little nervousness because you hadn't seen it in a while. But, like, Luis Castillo's a great pitcher. And he went out and pitched really, really well yesterday. Great outing from Miller. Right? My guess is tonight you're going to see a shove out outing from George Kirby, that he's going to go out there and do his thing because they have really good pitching. And there are guys on this team that are really good hitters and they're not hitting like it. Simple as that. I don't know if it's the new philosophy, the new strategy. I don't know if it's just bad luck and bad timing. I don't know if some of these guys are truly shot and that's going to be it for them. Eventually, within the next, I don't know, 2 weeks or so, we'll have much more of an answer to that question. But I don't know how you can, I don't know how this can happen. And it just feels so freaking predictable. Day after day after day, you just feel like you know exactly what's going to happen. And until they start to surprise us, until they start to return to the level of who they're supposed to be, it just feels like watching the same movie on repeat every single day.
Here's hoping Jonathan Clase is fun to watch then for the next few.
Yeah, he's going to come up and he's going to run around a little bit, and hopefully that'll help. Somebody's going to have to get on base in order to let him do that. You got to get hits occasionally.
Yep.
You got to hit the occasional home run. My gosh. Just play up to who you are. I mean, we've been saying this for years.
So
just,
I think what you're trying to say, like your slogan is it's early, and it is early, but it's not too early to have seen like one good game where they put everything together. Right?
You would like, certainly hope, on. Right? Like you that at some point that. You just see like just a game where everybody is themselves. Not even great. Just be yourself. Just be who you've been. Just be a normal player. Bizarre.
It's unbelievably. It's the pollen. I'm convinced.
It's appalling. It's got to be something. Maybe it's just appalling. We'll come right back with everything you need to know. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
You know, it really started off so promising. The bats looked like they were kind of coming to life on Friday. Bryce Miller was pitching deep into the game. Honestly, it was a fairly dominating start for him. And you're going, all right, this could end up being the weekend that this team starts to show us who they are, what they're made of, and look like the team that they were assembled to be. Instead, the offense totally abandoned them on Saturday. It didn't bother to show up again for Sunday. They had their chances. Man, did they ever. Bottom of the eighth, double play ball from Ty France with the bases loaded.
Now the stretch and the 2-2 on the way to Ty. Swinging a chopper up the middle, charging the shortstop. Swanson steps on the bag for one. The throw to first, and it's in time for the inning ending 6-3 double play.
That one hurt for sure. And then just to add a little insult to injury, the ninth inning ended this way.
Yeah, you know, everybody's going to get fired up. That's not.
Hold on a minute. Here it is.
And the pitch on the way. No, a toss over to first base and safe at first is Julio Rodriguez.
Is he though?
Holy smokes, that was close. Close. Julio was leaning towards second. He's able to dive back to the far corner of the bag. The throw looked like had him beat, but the late tag.
Oh, my goodness. Where is he going? Come on.
No. The call of the field is overturned. The runner is out.
Oh, no. What a disappointing, heartbreaking loss for the Mariners this afternoon. The call is overturned. Instead of being safe, Julio Rodriguez out, picked off by Alzolay, and that's how this game ends.
You don't see that very often. Pinch runner, star player, picked off to end the game. The whole thing is sort of hard to fathom. So why wasn't Julio out there? Scott Servais, he explains sort of where Julio's at right now.
A little change of the lineup today. Julio, just an off day. Just let him unplug a little bit. I think it's really important, not just from a physical side, but from a mental side. Just like sometimes you sit back, you watch a game, it looks a whole lot easier. I think we can all attest to that, than it actually is. So that's the reason behind it. There's nothing physically wrong with him. Just a chance for him to unplug. And, you know, he's a big part of our team. He's huge. To get him going, sometimes a day off will help.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, I didn't have any problems with the move. Did you? I mean, Julio has not played well. He's not swung the bat well. Give him a day off. Give him the opportunity to kind of sit and think. All right, so now you got a man on first with two outs in the ninth and you're down a run. Who's your best base dealer? It's Julio Rodriguez. Put him on. And I understand Dave Sims says, where's he going? He's trying to get to second base. That's why he's in there to begin with, so that a hit can tie that game. And unfortunately, he got caught leaning. He's not able to get back. And
you think that's Moore's role if he didn't get put in for Canzo?
Maybe, yeah, it might have been. And then you save Julio as maybe a bat off the bench, but that's the way it worked out. He was your best base stealing threat. He comes in for Cal. He's got an opportunity, and instead he gets picked off. Just a bummer. Luis Castillo at least looked much better, allowed just three runs, two of them earned, two run shot that, and then another run that scored on his own error. So that was not great, but he did throw a lot of swings and misses, which was a really, really important part of his game, and great to see that back. Hopefully he's turned the corner. And as I said earlier, they're only two games out. Reds will be in town for three. George Kirby tonight against Frankie Montas.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, Seahawks finally found themselves a veteran guard, as expected. He has spent a 9-year career in Detroit, San Francisco, with the Jets, played exclusively at left guard, and missed very few reps. That would be Laken Tomlinson. Just been remarkably healthy in his career. 32 years old, we'll see what he's got left, but at least this just gives them some veteran experience at a position that is clearly among their thinnest. Do I have the highest of hopes for him? No, not necessarily, but at least now they have a complete roster so that they don't, like, have to turn somebody in the draft, or else they won't be able to play, a starting five offensive lineman on opening day. So, good on them. Now, Laken Tomlinson will come in and compete for a gig.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, Scottie Scheffler is just on one heck of a run. He's now a 2-time Masters champion. Birdied 6 of his last 11 holes to beat Ludvig Åberg by 4 strokes yesterday. Åberg, Homa, Morikawa, they were all tied with Scheffler at some point on Sunday, but he outlasted all of them, which is just sort of what he does. Put that guy in a position to win, and it just seems like he finds a way to do it every time. He was... Yep, pretty calm throughout.
Yeah, I'm glad I brought my putting average down on 18. That was nice. Down to, 5 strokes. 2.5 is my average, so that's not bad. No, it's hard to put into words how special this is. It's been a long week, a grind of a week. The golf course was so challenging, and to be sitting here wearing this jacket again and getting to take it home is extremely special.
Yep, very, very impressive. Also yesterday, we did see Jim Nantz say goodbye to Vern Lundquist all those years on 16 in the tower. This was a nice moment between the two.
Vern wrote a book back in 2018 called Play by Play. And the last line in the book that he wrote, Vern, I want to apply it to you. He said, thanks, to borrow a phrase, thanks for the memories. Your voice has been a beautiful instrument. Thank you for a wonderful soundtrack for all of our lives.
Thank you so much, Jim. My honor. My privilege.
It's so amazing when you hear guys like Vern Lundquist get choked up and
finished.
Just,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, these guys speak so well all the time. They're so smooth. They're so confident. And to hear that yesterday, pretty special moment. All right, WNBA draft will be tonight, 4:30 our time on ESPN. So an opportunity to see Caitlin Clark before as if Saturday Night Live wasn't enough.
Right.
It's everything you need to know. How about Caitlin getting after Michael Che? That was great.
It's really good.
I thought it was awesome.
The perfect bit.
Yeah, it really was. And he handled it pretty well, too. And that was a good bit. If you haven't had a chance to see it, go see it. He's got like a long history of crushing women's sports in general, but especially the WNBA. And she just absolutely took it to him. It was pretty great.
Colin Jost just played like Brock's role for you.
Yeah.
Like, no, I haven't made that many jokes about women's sports. He's like, oh no, he's made a lot.
Roll the tape.
Roll tape. We made a little supercut for him. All right. Maura, that was part of the weekend. The Mariners are part of the weekend. We got the Masters this weekend. There's a few other things going on as well. Let's buzz through it.
I will be doing a deep dive.
Deep dive on the Masters.
Yep.
But for the Åberg. I know that it's an A, but it's Åberg. It's got a little O at the top of the A. And now it's either Åberg or Åberg.
I kept saying Åberg. I don't know how to say it.
I think it's O.
He's really good.
Åberg. Yeah. He's very, very good. All right. We'll come right back. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710salesports.com.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Brock and Salk's Rewind is presented by Toyota of Kirkland.
All right, we roll along here on the Monday morning, coming off of a beautiful, beautiful weekend. Gosh, what unbelievable weather we had here. You put that weather into the Pacific Northwest this time of year, and it makes this a very, very, very livable place. Like, oh, you get real spring? Yeah, I'm in. I'm in for real spring. I'm in for sitting outside yesterday quite a bit, mowing the lawn, just being around the sun.
Oh, that's where your allergies are coming from. You just inhaled a bunch of fresh cut
grass. I did
grass.
Mow the lawn. Yeah, that didn't help. It's all, yeah, it's all now in my throat.
Yeah.
Which is great. It's really, really, really awesome that's for hosting a radio show. It's what you're looking for. Maura, you spent some time figuring out what happened this weekend. Why don't you take us through it?
Figuring out what happened. I don't know if I can explain everything that happened with the Mariners, but we'll just talk it through, okay? Justin's getting the music.
There it is.
All right, let's start with Friday, because that was a good one. Bryce Miller was fantastic, going 6 1/3 scoreless innings, giving up 3 hits and 3 walks while striking out 4. He left to a standing ovation.
But it's, you can hear the applause building.
Yeah.
He's going to get a great ovation as he has pitched 7 13 1/3 scoreless. A good attaboy and a big ovation. Listen to it. But that Texas stroll. Here it is, big fella. Here I am. Here it comes. That's, I love his attitude. 4-0 Mariners.
Texas stroll.
That's Bury My Bones plays. That's a pretty tough song. He comes walking in from the bullpen with that song. He's got that swag walk.
It's a
good look.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if he kind of turns that next corner at some point, right? And goes from being kind of young, intriguing, a little bit up, a little bit down, inconsistent, but with great stuff, to being another hoss. He really turns out to be that, man. You've really developed some pretty fascinating talent coming up through that system. What I liked about this outing, and honestly his last two outings, obviously he didn't give up a lot of runs, so that was a great start. But I love how economical he's been with his pitch count. That's always been my concern with Bryce Miller, is way too many foul balls. He can get the pitch count up, and the next thing you know, you're in the fifth inning, and he's thrown 92 pitches, and hopefully he gets through 5. Maybe he pitches into the 6th. Seeing him go 7 2/3, lots of ground ball outs, lots of soft contact, using that two-seamer, using both fastballs to kind of move it and shape it. I thought he was dynamic and had a really, really good outing. I mean, obviously, he was great, but that's a really promising outing for what he's capable of.
Did you see what his pitch count was at for this game?
Right around 100, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah. So I was thinking the same thing. I was like, hey, he's getting deep, but there was a couple innings where I was like, if he doesn't get out of this now, we're not going to see him.
But he found a way, right? I mean, he didn't always need to. I think he only struck out 3 or 4 guys in the game.
I think it's 4.
And the Cubs don't strike out that much. They're a contact hitting team. So, okay, play to their, you know, kind of get them to do what they do. And he induced a ton of soft contact, which is a great recipe for him to win.
Yeah, to your point, he said that it was a goal of his this offseason. He knows that he needs to get further into games. And he talked about how he focused on reaching that goal.
Really, all of last year, like if I went short or if I went long, it was like you're going to get a lot of heaters. And even, you know, the third time through, they knew what they were getting. So it was, you know, as the game would go on, they've seen it a couple times and they know what's coming. And, you know, these hitters are good, so they can adjust. But that's one thing I wanted to work on, was like being able to keep hitters on their toes, you know, every at bat, and where they can't just sit a pitch and you know it's coming. So it's been big.
Well, also that two-seamer should help as well, right? Because the idea of that pitch is to get some of that soft contact, is to get guys to roll over on it. And he used it, I thought, incredibly effectively on Friday. That was awesome.
He did. And that's, I think, why there was only the 4 strikeouts, because he was getting all that soft contact. But it was a pretty efficient outing. The offense was able to put a run on the board when Luis Urias was hit by a pitch and walked in Haniger in the second. But things were pretty quiet from that point until the bottom of the 4th, when walks from Garver, Moore, and Crawford loaded the bases, and Julio hit a line drive to short center that scored Garver and Moore.
0-1 here to Julio. The pitch. Swing on. Line drive. Bellinger coming in. Can't get it. On one hop. Scoring is Garver. Scoring is Dylan Moore. Julio with a 2-run single, and the Mariners have a 3-0 lead here in the 4th.
It's funny, Julio has, I think, 6 runs driven in this year, and four of them have been like massive game-changing win-the-game kind of hits for RBI. It's just funny how the season can work that way.
Hopefully tells you once he does get going more consistently.
Of course.
That's like how good this is going to be, but it's up and down right now.
It's kind of the point I was making to start the show. Like, yeah. When you get real Julio, when you get real Polanco, when you get, you know, real Mitch Garver, who's been atrocious to start this season, we'll get an opportunity to see how this thing was built and whether or not it'll work. But if those guys are going to play the way they have, there's just nothing. It doesn't even resemble the team that it's supposed to resemble. I really enjoyed Friday. I really like that Apple broadcast. I thought Dontrell Willis was awesome.
Yeah, D-Train is the best.
He was phenomenal. We got to get him on. I know he was on with, I think, the afternoon show a couple of weeks ago, but gosh, I would love to have him on. I thought he was just a perfect mix, and other announcers in baseball should take notice. That's how, you know, you talk about growing the game of baseball. Having that mix of a little bit of education, some great stories, some awesome charisma, made you laugh, self-deprecating. I enjoyed him and the Cubs announcer kind of getting after each other a little bit and some old memories. I thought it was just a phenomenal broadcast. Everything about it, I thought that was great. Really enjoyed it. So
they also made a point to talk about the double Mitchwitch, and we got a text on Friday that MLB Central brought it up. So I don't think you're ever going to get one again. I think you hyped it up too much initially, and
right.
Now it's just
now it's caught on. That's fine. The next time I go, I'm going to go over to the ballpark today. I don't know whether I'm going to get a chance to eat over there, but I think the next thing that is on my mind is probably that that curry thing.
Oh, the Area 2 with this curry?
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
I think I got to try that.
The Tamari bar?
Yeah.
Justin, you've had it, right?
I had the regular, the Area 206 one. I know there's, I think, one more, but yeah. It was actually really, and I'm not a curry person at all, so
same.
I felt bad, but like, I'm going to give it a bad review, and it was terrific.
Yeah, I think I got to go try that.
Yeah, worth it.
I'm getting hungry. All right, Ty France then hit a single to right to drive in another run and make it 4-0 Mariners. Munoz went 3-up, 3-down, striking out 2 in the 8th. And Ryan Stanek gave up a home run in the 9th, but was able to get the final 2 outs after that for the 4-2 win. On Saturday, Emerson Hancock went 6 innings, giving up 4 hits, 2 runs, no walks, and striking out 4. I mean, pretty much what you would ask of him at this
point. Absolutely.
Each team scored in the 2nd, the Cubs with a sac fly and the M's on a Luis Urias double to left. Hancock then gave up a solo shot to Suzuki in the 3rd to make it 2-1 Cubs. Both offenses were pretty quiet after that until Tyson Miller replaced Emerson Hancock in the 7th and gave up a home run to Michael Busch, who was on fire this weekend.
Yeah.
Austin Voth. Did we decide it's Voth?
It's Voth.
Voth? Okay. Making sure I'm saying that right. Replaced Miller in the 8th and immediately gave up a home run to Miguel Amaya. So it's now 4-1 Cubs, and that is how it would remain. It was the 4th time this season the Mariners have produced 1 or fewer runs. Interesting when you look at the box score because the numbers are very similar. Both the Cubs and the Mariners struck out 8 times. Each team only had 6 hits, and the Mariners actually had 3 walks to the Cubs 0, but the 3 solo home runs made the difference.
Yeah, you got to hit for power. I got that kind of on my list of things to talk about today. You got to hit for power. This is still driving me crazy, and I know we sort of debated it, talked about it in the offseason, and the strikeouts, and everybody wants more contact, and it's frustrating when you see your guys strike out. Yeah, you know what were really good? Major league pitchers in 2024. They're absurd. They're really, really good. This idea that you're going to string 6, 7, 8, 9 hits together, I just don't see it happening very often throughout the game. The pitching is just ridiculous. You know what you need to do? When there's a mistake, you need to put it in the seats. When there's a mistake, you need to bury it. And when you give up 3 home runs and you don't have one yourself, you're probably going to lose. Generally, whoever, you know, hits more home runs in a game will win that game. It helps if there's guys on base, certainly, which is why you got to take your walks. But you got to hit some home runs. And when Julio and Garver and France don't have any home runs yet this year, and a bunch of their other guys have what, maybe 1? Like, yeah, that's not going to do it. Now, you know who's been sneaky good for the last couple weeks? Luis Urias.
Yeah.
He's been sneaky good. Tell me you don't kind of like Luis Urias.
He had a pretty good defensive day, too, on Friday night.
He had a really good day. They were all over it. Oh, he was making every play and then a couple of hits. He's actually been pretty good. He's kind of fun. There's something about him I like. I don't know exactly what it is yet, but I kind of like him.
Admit you like him now. Before, you were like, don't tell anyone.
You know, I know.
Keep it just yourself.
That's I probably fine. Shouldn't tell
Go
anybody.
All in. Go
I mean, he's
all
hitting 174, so. But he's got a 730 OPS, which is above the major league average right now. He's got a positive WAR, which is untrue for a lot of the other players on this team. He's been one of the best Mariners so far.
Oh, so is Canzone.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that.
On the other end of the spectrum, can we talk about Sebby Zavala being 0-for-12 with 5 strikeouts and no walks through 4 games?
We can't. No.
No?
No. At least he's played. No, hasn't played well in the field.
Yeah.
Is that a problem?
Sebby Zavala has been arguably the worst player in Major League Baseball to start the year. He's not done one thing well.
No.
I mean, I'm not taking it personal. He literally has not done anything well to start his Mariner
Pretty
career. Nothing.
Start,
he's been awful. Nothing good. Not one good thing.
All right. Well, we'll move to yesterday. First off, can you believe the uniform issues continue as the Mariners are still waiting for their Sunday cream uniforms from Nike? Ryan Divish says they're expected by the next homestand. And then on Friday, apparently, Bryce Miller had to wear the Bat Boy's pants because his City Connect pants didn't fit.
Is that that giant Bat Boy they've got?
I mean, I would assume he can't.
I don't think so. Bryce Miller's not very big.
I mean, Bryce Miller's not huge, but I would still assume the Bat Boy can't be.
They do have that
super
one
small.
Huge Bat Boy. Maybe it's him.
The big tall kid who is always on the opposing side?
Yeah.
Yeah. I need to meet him.
I'm surprised you haven't, Justin.
I would like to talk to him.
Yeah, why don't you know him? What's the matter with him?
Maybe they're busy. I don't know.
But the uniform sagas this season, I can't.
The whole thing is so dumb. And it's not just the Mariners. Obviously, this is across Major League Baseball.
He's headquartered so close. How have they? It's been weeks and they can't get these uniforms here?
Yeah. It has to do with the Suez Canal.
Okay.
I think.
It's bad.
Yeah.
Some of the teams don't have their City Connects either. And like, that's a big push from baseball. That was Nike's deal. Like, it's just.
So is it a Nike thing or is it a Fanatics thing?
I think it's
thing?
A Fanatics thing.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like it's not a Nike problem. It feels like Fanatics is the one that has sort of screwed this whole thing up.
I don't know. He said they're waiting for them from Nike.
Well, maybe it's a Nike issue. I don't know. Or Nike, depending on who you ask.
Oh, yeah. You took a lot of heat on Friday for being so mean to Scott.
Don't care.
People were like, Salk, call in. We haven't got new colors. And then you just completely roast someone.
Well, that's because Scott calls every week. He's kind of annoying. And he, you know, he's saying Nike.
Kind of annoying.
Is he not?
I tell him every time I'm on the phone, like, Scott, you got to stick to one topic.
Scott,
you
your point.
Four times. You got to pick one.
Right.
He's like, okay, got it.
And then he doesn't. He doesn't listen to you.
Next time, Scott, now you know.
Nike.
You have one topic.
Then you were just like, what's Tiger's new brand called? Sunday Red. So do I think he's going to wear red on Sunday?
He literally called up to ask if Tiger was going to wear red on Sunday with his new brand.
I didn't know that's what his new brand was called.
Honestly, I don't think I did either.
I mean, a fairly quick Google search could probably help you with that. Like, I don't mind. I like taking calls. I like having conversations with people. But I'm not Google. Like, just Google it.
Okay. We'll move on.
Hey, what else happened?
Sunday, a double, a single, and a throwing error by Luis Castillo put the M's behind 1-0 to start the game. In the second inning, Dominic Canzone ran into the wall shoulder first while making a catch and had to exit. That did not look fun. It sounds like it's a sprained AC joint for him. That's one we always hear about more often in football, so I really don't know how long that could keep him out for baseball, but he will be going to the IL, as we said, with Jonathan Clase coming up. Dylan Moore replaced him. The M's only managed to get one runner aboard through the first three innings. And then in the fourth, a Dansby Swanson double and another Michael Bush home run gave the Cubs a 3-0 lead. The rookie first baseman has hit a home run in each of the Cubs' last four games. Jorge Polanco pulled the M's within one in the bottom of the sixth with this shot.
Pitch to Polanco, swung on, high drive, right field. That is looking good. Carry, baby, carry. Goodbye. Home run, Jorge Polanco. First home run in this building as a Mariner. The Mariners are on the board. We got a 3-2 Chicago lead.
And then they got two on the board in the seventh with Dylan Moore hit by a pitch and Garver walked, but Luke Raley hit into a double play to end that inning. In the eighth, they had the bases loaded with one out after Polanco, Rojas, and Crawford were all walked. And Ty France grounded into that double play that we heard earlier. Then in the ninth, with two outs, Cal Raleigh gets on board. Julio is brought in as a pinch runner, and we all know what happened.
Yeah, that'll be a big topic of conversation here in about 15 minutes. I'll lay off Julio for now and just sort of look at the big picture, okay? Remember OPS Plus? You guys remember that stat, what that means? OPS is on base plus slugging. It's a really good barometer of what kind of a hitter you are. OPS plus puts it into context with everybody else in the game, where 100 is league average. If you're over 100, it's what percentile over you'd be. Under 100 is how much lower you are. How many Mariners have an OPS plus over 100?
Two.
Three.
Two and three?
Mm-hmm.
I got five, sort of.
Okay, wow.
So Samad Taylor, kind of off the team now, does technically have an OPS plus of 138.
Yeah.
After that, you've got Josh Rojas, 139. Dominic Canzone, 136. Mitch Haniger, 126. And Luis Urias, 114. So four. Wow. Let's call it four. Everybody else on this team has a negative, you know, an OPS below 100. League average. So just some of these numbers. Remember, 100 is league average. Cal Raleigh, 68. Ty France, 87. Jorge Polanco, 86. J.P. Crawford, 56. Julio Rodriguez. Anybody want to guess a number on Julio?
I don't.
32. Mitch Garver, 41. And then this is really amazing. I'm sorry. Dylan Moore, 92. Coming close.
Yeah.
Luke Raley, negative 11. I didn't know you could go negative, but he's a negative 11. And yes, Sebi Zavala, negative 100. So what does that mean? He's average for what? Like, an average for a player who's working for the other team? Like, what is negative average? I don't even know what to make of that number. But there you go. Those are OPS plus numbers here through the first 16 games of the season.
All right. We'll move on. Do you want more Masters or do you want a Roma Dunze story?
Masters, obviously.
Okay.
Yeah.
Scottie Scheffler won the Masters for the second time in 3 years on Sunday. He started the day in a three-way tie for the lead, but ended up winning by four strokes, shooting a final round 68. This was what he had to say. Someone asked him afterwards if on the back nine, he kind of in the back of his head decided, if my wife goes into labor now, I'm not leaving.
You know, I guess that's a testament to how good of a headspace I was in. I wasn't thinking about that much. I was doing my best to stay in the moment, stay calm, execute shots. I was very focused out there today. I feel like I did a really good job. You know, Teddy did a great job of making sure that we kept the golf course in front of us. You know, I didn't get off to the best start, but had some key up and downs. And, you know, Teddy once again did a great job of keeping me in it. And, we had a great week.
But would you have left? No. Everybody seemed so concerned with that.
Yeah, thankfully we didn't have to find out whether or not he would leave.
I wanted to see the universe call his bluff.
Think
that
so?
Would have been a pretty interesting ending of a Masters tournament.
I think she wouldn't have told him.
I thought the same thing. I was like, if he's on like 6, 7, 8,
she wouldn't have told him.
Unless they had that deal where she's like, no, I don't care where it is, when it is.
She wouldn't have told him.
It's her first kid?
It's her first, yeah. Because he said there'll be plenty of opportunities to play more Masters. I only get to see my kid be born once.
I hope she wouldn't have told him. They're just too much on the line in that moment. It was a good tournament. It honestly was. The course was playing so challenging in general over the course of the 4 days. And, you know, some of it was, you know, getting an opportunity to play at some of the times he did. So he built a little bit of a lead and then survived when the wind was crazy. And then yesterday was able to go pin hunting and he was phenomenal, right? At some point, a couple times yesterday, they were tied. At one point, they had, all four of those guys tied together. And it felt like once he kind of got clear of them, he is a tremendous finisher. Like, give that guy a lead late, and he just does not get rattled. It's just in his DNA, and his closing ability is probably the thing that sets him apart, in addition to, obviously, the great ball striking and all the other things he does well. He was he was kind of a machine yesterday, to be honest with you.
Doesn't make mistakes.
No. Yeah, he's very machine-like. He's not my favorite golfer to watch, but I don't have anything negative to say about him, certainly. He's just like a Terminator. He just kind of keeps coming at you.
Yeah, simultaneously it looks like he's in his 20s and his 50s, and I can't figure it out.
Yeah, yeah, that is weird. That's a good point.
Should Tiger stop doing these?
No, absolutely not. He made the cut, and, you know, good for him. But he had to what? He had to walk 23 holes on Friday. Not surprisingly, Saturday, he just wasn't there physically. You know, I struggle with the Tiger thing. I was talking about it on the golf course with some guys on Friday because I know everybody gets excited about Tiger. And for me, I started watching golf and getting into it after Tiger's reign. So he does not carry the same weight with me that he does with others. That doesn't make me anti-Tiger. I just don't get quite as excited about it. What I would say is, while I feel bad for him that he's gotten older and he has some back issues that are natural, I find it really challenging to feel that bad for him when some of these are self-inflicted wounds. Like, at the end of the day, he was able to overcome the back issues. What he's not been able to overcome was the car accident that he caused himself. And while it stinks for the golf world, it stinks for everybody who views, it's tough for him, I guess, but I don't really feel bad. I feel bad for Jason Day, who had vertigo, who had back problems and wasn't able to continue his career the way he wanted to. I don't feel as bad for somebody who's driving a million miles an hour, falls asleep, etc., and crashes into a tree. And then afterwards, it's like, oh, I'm not the same player I was. Yeah, no kidding. Take better care.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
How's your guy's Spieth do?
Well, I think that's all the time we have. that was a good trip around the weekend. Thank you. Yeah, it was not a good showing for the LIV guys either. DeChambeau was really the only guy in it, and he had all kinds of issues yesterday as well. So it's interesting. John Rahm had a terrible tournament. Phil did not do anything. And then some of the other guys who've left here over the course of the last year or so were non-factors in the tournament. I wonder, Koepka was a non-factor. I wonder if Dustin Johnson was a non-factor. I wonder if that is going to be the norm. If those guys just continue to fade because of the type of schedule they're playing, because they're not locked in. It's a bummer when you watch these PGA events and they don't feel as great as they used to because you just don't have as many big familiar names. But the guys who were there sure seemed to be playing a whole lot better.
Cam Smith didn't play bad.
Huh?
Cam Smith didn't play too bad.
No, he played okay. And Patrick Reed, I think, was in the top, 15 or so. But in general, it was really not like a fantastic showing for the LIV guys. They were not a relevant part of the tournament. All right, Brock's in. We got a lot of Julio to talk. What the heck happened? What is going on with the best player on this team? It's next on Brock and Salk.